Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
So, hello and welcome to all of you. I'm Madeline Winter. I'm a Hand in Hand instructor based in Sydney in Australia, and I work across the world with parents. And I'm joined today by my colleague, my dear colleague, Kathy Gordon, who's also a certified hand-in-hand instructor who's in LA in California. And we know that you're busy, so thank you for taking the time to join us. It's a real pleasure to have you here. We're going to talk about the challenges of staying sane as our children move into adolescence. There's a lot going on at this stage of parenting for our children, but also for us. And Kathy and I want to talk about a very powerful way to stay flexible and relaxed as you meet those challenges. There's a lot to learn about the changes that are happening for our kids. There are huge developmental changes, massive brain changes and restructuring of their brain, and big hormonal surges. And at the end of this call, we'll talk a little bit about how you can learn more about this and how hand-in-hand parenting works to help you stay close and connected through the ups and downs. But today, Kathy and I want to talk about you, about what it takes to stay sane as your children move into adolescence and how to get the emotional support you need to stay close to your kids. It's the oxygen mask, I think, that you need to pull down for yourself before you can really help your kids.
Right.
But before we start into the guts of it, while we're waiting for people to gather, Kathy, will you let us know a little bit about Hand in Hand?
Yes, love to. So Hand in Hand is a non-profit organization founded by Patty Whiffer 25 years ago. And our mission is to make parenting life be what you want it to be, to give you the tools and support you need to lift the difficulties out of your life and bring you closer to your child. The hand-in-hand approach focuses our minds and our efforts on creating and maintaining and repairing a really good connection with our children. Excuse me for just a second. I don't know if it's... garbage day here. Bothering anyone else, but I felt like I was shouting over the garbage trucks. So this approach is really different from most of what's out there. Most approaches focus on controlling a child's behavior by some kind of punishment or reward system, and that can range from physical punishments to timeouts, threats, takeaways, or I don't know if you've tried this, but particularly as our kids get older, we attempt to reason and negotiate until we just finally lose it. And what we found works better is actually connecting with children. A child's sense of emotional safety, which allows them to learn and thrive and to make good decisions, depends on their feeling connected to us. And there's no different. It's no different when our kids are 5 or when they're 15. So we offer 5 basic listening tools for promoting parent-child connection and for promoting good support for parents so that we can think and we can be there for our kids. So we have 4 parent-to-child listening tools, and those are special time, stay listening, play listening, and setting limits, and then a parent-to-parent listening tool, which is listening partnerships. And you can learn how to practice these powerful listening tools in a myriad of ways. We have lectures, we have articles, we have these lectures, these free teleseminars. We have blog posts with parents writing success stories about how they use these tools and in 100 different kinds of situations that they've solved by connecting with their children. And we have self-guided video classes. Madeline and I both offer private consultations, and we both teach hand-in-hand core parenting class called the Starter Class. When you take a Starter Class, you're part of a weekly mentoring and support call where you're learning and practicing the tools. And all of these resources can be found on our website, handinhandparenting.org, and we'll remind you of all that toward the end of our call. And lastly, if you want a comprehensive summary of the hand-in-hand approach, Patty Wiffler and Tasha Shore's new book called Listen is a great read. We'll send you the link in the email that follows this teleseminar, and you can always find it through our website using the search function. Well, great. We've had a lot of people join us in the last couple minutes, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Madeline and I want to welcome you and thank you for being here. We know how tough it can be to arrange your schedule and childcare to commit to this hour. And whether you're with us live right now or you're listening to the recording, we really appreciate what it took for you to be here. We appreciate your commitment to your family, and we hope that you'll come away from this call feeling a little uplifted with some ideas and resources to make life go a little better for you and your adolescents. Both Madeline and I are moms of teens, and we'll briefly introduce ourselves before we go any further. Madeline?
Sure. I'm Madeline Winter, and I'm the mother of a 13-year-old girl. Things have been shifting and changing for a couple of years now, but my daughter is well into the brain and body changes of adolescence. And I'd have to say she's pretty good with it all. However, I can tell I'm much more volatile than I used to be, and I feel like I've lost the evenness of my early parenting, and I'm much more reactive. And we'll talk a bit later about why that is, but in brief, it's become clear to me that when I was a teen, things really got rough for me, and that's affecting my parenting a lot now. I've been using and teaching hand in hand since way before my daughter was born, and I'm really excited to be learning it anew as she grows up. And I love walking alongside other parents who are on the same journey. And I particularly love parents of preteens and teens, that we have some experience under our belt, and we understand that it's not really about the difficulty this week with getting in the car seat or eating peas or doing homework, but it's about the long haul, and it's about growing young adults and keeping them safe and having them want to be around us at the end of it all. And I really enjoy the complexity of this stage of parenting, the challenge of fostering independence and keeping them safe both at the same time, and also the challenge of working out where we fit in it all. You know, now that we're out of early parenting, well, some of us are, some of us are doing both, but what our goals and passions are and making sure that we keep those in focus. And Kathy?
Yeah, thank you, Madeline. It's really great to be presenting this call with you. So I'm Kathy Gordon. I'm the single adoptive mom of a, well, he's 13 at the moment, but on Wednesday, he'll be 14. We live in Los Angeles, and I discovered Hand in Hand when my son was around 4 or 5, and he was really struggling, and I was really struggling with his struggles. The Hand in Hand tools, it really made a huge difference in my parenting and my relationship with my son, particularly as he hit his preteens. All those identity issues that adolescents wrestle with, they can be multiplied exponentially when you don't have your biological family. And I've been a teacher of one thing or another all my adult life, so when the hand-in-hand tools were making such a difference in my family and really empowering me to be the kind of parent I wanted to be, it was only natural I would become a certified hand-in-hand instructor. So today we want to start with what we hope you'll get from this call. Why you are just the right parent for the job. really hope you come away with that. Why parenting is challenging, period, and why there's these particular challenges of parenting preteens and teens. Why it's helpful to look back at our own experience as teens, and why listening helps, and how we can use our adult-to-adult tool of listening partnerships to get the support we need. And then we're going to leave some time toward the end to answer some of your questions. So, Madeline, why is parenting, particularly parenting preteens and teens, so hard, and why does it seem to get harder?
Thanks, Kathy. I think the first thing to say is, though, that we really want you all to know that you're just the right person for the job. Things can get rough at this point in parenting, if they weren't already. And sometimes I think we lose our perspective on this, but you are the right person. You're deeply connected to this child you've raised. You're really committed to them, and they want you no matter how it feels. Ellen Galinsky is a researcher who did a survey of over 1,000 children, and she measured how they felt about their family relationships and their parents' work lives. And in all her interviews of teens, the message that came through was that they want us, that they need our guidance, and they want us to listen to them. So no matter what it looks like, we really need to keep reaching for them and trusting that we're the right person to do that. And our experience is that Hand in Hand's listening tools will help you do that, and help you work out how to get a bit more help and support. So we think that there are a whole lot of things that contribute to this being a challenging stage of parenting, and some are to do with the broader society and some myths and misinformation that's out there, and some of them are sort of more biological and related to our child's development, and some of them are to do with us and where we're at. I started off with a really long list, so now I've got it down to a few essentials. So here's a few. We won't have time to go into them, but it's to remind you that there are real reasons why parenting an adolescent can be, you know, tricky. So the first are things to do with what's going on for our kids. There's major brain changes happening from around 12, and despite the myth about it, it's not just hormones. There are big shifts in brain function, which mean that their brains are like a construction site, and things are often out of balance or absent, and it affects important things like their assessment of risks and consequences, and that they're too busy internally to be reassuring us that we're doing okay, and they often need to push back more. You might be getting a constant chant of leave me alone, and that can be challenging sometimes because they're getting big, sometimes bigger than us. They're also carrying around a bunch of pretty big feelings. They've been in the world a while, and it's not a world that's all that good at respecting young people. They've not had a lot of control. They can have been belittled a lot and put down and not consulted, and that adds up. And connected with that, as young people get older, they take on the message that it's not okay to release feelings. You may find there won't often be the deep, easy sob or fresh, vigorous tantrum that they had when they were little, and they won't necessarily emerge from their upsets sparkly and cooperative like they might sometimes have done when they were younger. They're up against big new social challenges, and they're getting less unstructured playtime of younger years where they could connect without fuss and have a good laugh. Then there's our relationship with them, which begins to have a bit of history by now. We may have some big regrets about what's happened so far. There are probably some stuck or gnarly spots in our relationship with our child that aren't shifting, and we might be revisiting them often, and they come up every time we want to, you know, set a direction or we bring a limit. Often that's right there in the middle. And the other thing is that for us, we tend to be tired, and a little bit more isolated than we might have been when they were little. We've got a bit less spark, and we could be looking forward to just a bit of a break now that they're not so little. But in fact, we're launching into a whole new phase. And just in case you're wondering, our kids can tell that we are under pressure. We mentioned Ellen Galinsky's research just before, and she says, quote, if they had only one wish, and that's what I gave them, they would wish that their parents would be less stressed and less tired. The kids actually worry about us, and they primarily worry because we're tired and stressed. So, Kathy.
Thanks, Madeline, for that summary of what can get in the way of being the kind of parent we want to be with our preteens and teens. Now, what to do about all this? Our approach at Hand in Hand in any parenting situation, no matter what the age of your kids, is to start with us. First, to look at why we're so tight, tense about something, why something's hard, and why we might be losing it. And even though we decide things, we want things to be different, it's still difficult not to flare up when our child seems to be using a rude tone of voice or refuses to stop playing that computer game or won't help with the housework. Madeline just gave us a whole list of great reasons why we're stressed and how that can make us reactive. But there's another dynamic. Brain science tells us that our past often affects our present experience. If our past experiences were hard, if our memory of them got wrapped up in painful emotion, then that painful emotion can be pulled up now in the present, even years later. So let's do a little poll here. I'm gonna ask some of you, when you think about adolescence, what do you remember about how you felt? I'm gonna ask you for just a word, maybe two. Just give us a tiny picture, excuse me, in one or two words of what it was like. And if you have a thought to offer, if you press star two and I'll open your line and you can just, or here, why don't we do it this way? I'm going to open the line, and anybody who has a word to throw out about what adolescence was like for you, your lines are open. As a thought, what was adolescence like for you?
I'll say something.
I know for me, it was just the time when I felt isolated, socially backwards, longing to fit in, completely misunderstood by my parents. You, Madeline? A couple words?
Yeah, confusing. I mean, it was exciting, too. But I think probably the main sense is just there not being much adult help.
Mm-hmm.
Very isolated from help.
Yeah. So all those feelings, isolation, loneliness, heartbreak, a feeling that no one was on our side, we are vulnerable to those feelings coming flooding back now. In fact, parenting is a constant, and this is really one of the ways in which Hand in Hand is very unique, in that we're grounded in this brain science that tells us that parenting is a constant process of being triggered and feeling powerless. Those old feelings being re-stimulated and then feeling powerless. If someone had listened to us well back then, we might have been able to store those stressful experiences in useful ways. But most of us didn't have anybody to listen to us. And we, you know, we aren't always aware that we're being affected by the past. Our feelings are contained in what psychiatrist Dan Siegel calls implicit memory. These are memories or sensations that are stored in our limbic system, the emotional processing system of our brain, and what we at Hand in Hand affectionately refer to as our emotional backpack. A characteristic of these memories, according to Siegel, is that when something in the present triggers that unconscious memory, those sensations come flooding back. The term we use for this in Hand is re-stimulate. And as old memories are being pulled up, our body or our brain responds neurologically as if we were back in that moment. And as you can imagine, those triggers really can muck up our thinking and make us susceptible to all those social pressures and judgments about our child and judgments about us. One of my favorite Dr. Dan quotes from his book, Parenting from the Inside Out, speaks to this. He says, "We're not really listening to our children because our own internal experiences are being so noisy, that's all we can hear." So, Madeline, how do we get rid of that noise?
Well, fortunately, Hand in Hand's parent-to-parent support tool, the Listening Partnership, gives us a powerful place to download and blow off about current tensions. And I can't tell you what a difference that makes to me. I recently didn't have much, I have a regular listening partnership, and recently for various reasons it didn't happen. And what I noticed was just a huge leap in my just general reactiveness. Because I do regular listening partnerships, sometimes I lose a sense of what a difference it actually makes. But listening partnerships also give us a place to go back and clean up and heal those early experiences so that they're no longer so noisy. And we can use them to avoid or reduce the impact of some of those sort of challenges in staying connected to our young people that we talked about earlier. We can talk in a listening partnership about how we feel about parenting, about how we feel about the pressures that are on us and our children, and how we feel about, for instance, our child's stubborn independence or distance or fears about screen addiction or troubles with friendships, whatever the issue is. And we can use listening partnerships to really think well about our child and consistently see them as good in spite of their current behaviour or our struggles. They aren't bad and out to get us, though we feel like that sometimes. They're good and they have struggles, and so are we. Completely good and with struggles. And the tool of a listening partnership is unique in that it is peer-to-peer support. So my listening partners are parents just like me. We share a few agreements that make the process work, but we can be each other's lifeline, each other's oxygen mask through this process. So how do we do it? Well, we decide on a finite amount of time to exchange 15, 20 or 30 minutes each way, and I really recommend setting a timer so you don't have to worry about the time. And my partner listens to me without interruption. He or she doesn't give advice. They trust that if I have a chance to offload some of my old hurts and current tensions, I'll have access to the thinking part of my brain and I'll figure it out. And they also hold in their mind that I'm good and that everyone I'm talking about is good and that we're all doing or we all did the best that we could or can. We have struggles, but we're good and smart underneath those. And once we get the emotion out of the way, we'll be able to think freshly about the situation and options will become available to us that we can't think of when we're upset. One of those we'll talk about later, but when we're tense, it's very hard for us to be playful, and listening partnerships are a great way to get sort of a lightness and playfulness back in our interactions with our children. And I can use this time to talk about anything I need to. I can work through a problem, rant and rave about my child, my dad, anyone else who might have wronged me in the past or now. And the facts actually aren't that important. It's my opportunity to get to old feelings that are giving me trouble, my emotional backpack. And as safety builds in our listening partnerships, I might cry or tremble or laugh or sweat or yawn. And that's the physical process by which old feelings are released. We're fairly familiar with that with our kids, but it's the same for us. And when our time is finished, we switch, knowing that we switch and I know that my partner, this is really important, my partner won't refer to anything I just shared or released. In order to feel safe enough to share my deepest feelings, my worries, I need to know that my partner is only thinking well of me, is sure that I'm good, and that they're not going to refer again to anything I've said. And once I've offloaded these feelings, I don't have to manage them anymore, so I can access my thinking and my intelligence and develop more capacity to, what I've noticed is I get more flexible. And, you know, our brain uses up significant energy to manage all of those feelings, and it gets in the way of me being effective and responsive and creative and loving my daughter fully. Kathy, Kathy will share a bit about a specific challenge that she has worked through in a listening partnership. I'd like to talk about using a listening partnership as a general kind of vacuum cleaner for your mind. So as Kathy's already mentioned, one of the big challenges we're being reminded of is how things were for us when we were young people. And sometimes it can get tricky to distinguish between what happened to us and what's happening to our children. So it can make a big difference to just routinely go back and look at what things were like when we were teens. So with one of my listening partners, periodically, we ask ourselves that question. What was it like when we were, we've been doing this for a long time, so it was when we were three, when we were five, and now my daughter's 13, so we're currently working through our early teens. And I find with a thoughtful listener by my side, there's a real sense of relief about doing this. It's a spot which I think many of us just walk away from our teens, and we don't ever want to go back there, and it just sits there burdening us. And, you know, we didn't get to talk about it when it happened all those years ago, and we still need to talk about it. When I do this, I often find it a bit surprising what turns up. I find that there are things I'd forgotten which come to light when I answer this question. It can suddenly make sense of why I'm struggling to respond with patience, or I'm having trouble listening to my daughter. And for instance, when she started in high school last year, I hit a really rough spot. And I was struggling to have patience with her. And in this routine telling the story of my start to high school, I realized that just as I had been launching into this new big phase of life as a young person, my parents' marriage failed and they split up really horribly. And it's like no wonder I was feeling agitated and upset. There's something about my daughter at that point is just reminding me of myself at that point, and up it all comes. And other times I'll notice an area where I'm having trouble just listening to her. I'll feel like I literally have to zip my mouth because it's so hard for me not to burst forth with my own feelings about the topic. And I've been working through memories, for instance, of my own friendship issues in early high school, and I've been surprised how many feelings have come up for me, plenty of tears about how hard it was back then. And draining this bucket of feeling that floods me when she starts to talk has made it easier just to listen and not step in and try and compulsively problem solve. However, just as an aside, she takes me in hand. These days she fronts it by saying, "Mum, I'm going to tell you something and you have to just listen." So she's a bit more on top of the process than I am, I think. So Kathy, you're going to talk about how to use listening time to work on a painful piece of your childhood that was affecting your ability to connect with your son.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Madeline. All of you good parents, I cannot begin to tell you how listening partnerships have changed my parenting and my relationship with my son. As a single parent, I'm often under so much stress, I can feel alone and overwhelmed, and we don't have any family out here in Los Angeles. It's just the two of us. And so in these moments, I find myself doing and saying things I swore I would never do. And there, what I found is there's actually a ratio between the amount of listening time I get and my capacity for patience and playfulness. It's like I find my son's behavior just so much less triggering. And while I've used listening partnerships to help with issues big and small, the most triggering behavior for me has been my son's anger and aggressiveness. Now, brain science tells us that an aggressive child is a scared child. But in order to see the fear that was driving my son and to reach for him, I needed to get a big chunk of listening time, many chunks of listening time around this issue. And I've worked on it over and over in many listening partnerships. And, you know, in Hand in Hand, we talk about our children having emotional projects. Well, it turns out that we adults have emotional projects, too. So I kind of started in listening time exploring my family's generational history of explosiveness, my father's rage, how badly his father treated him. I also explored my own history of anger and throwing things. And I discovered that my deep shame about my behavior when I was an adolescent was part of why I was having such a hard time with my son's behavior. And as we've said, those old memories, there's a chunk of feeling or a sensation attached to them, and we want to get to that feeling, get it up and out. And as sometimes we just talk and talk, and it doesn't seem like we're really getting to the underlying feelings. Well, one time my listening partner suggested that I might push against the wall as I was talking, and that physical exertion, kind of fighting, allowed me to get to the feelings underneath. I started to cry hard as I felt and released rage, and my body shook, and I started to sweat. And as Madeline suggested, you know, as she mentioned, that the tears, the sweating, the trembling, the crying, and even the laughter is when we're actually releasing that sensation from our limbic system or our nervous system. The words, "it's not my fault," popped into my mind, and I had this sense of being very small. From time to time, my partner would murmur a little empathy, and her warm attention, it helped me know that this fear was all in my emotional backpack and that I was not this fear, that I am good. And this one particular time, suddenly in my mind's eye, I saw myself as Superwoman, and I started to laugh. And I realized that my rage and my fight response had been a survival mechanism, developed when I was very small and very scared, and I could forgive myself. After that session, that listening time, I noticed that I was lighter, and I found that I could stay calm and even playful when my son got angry and upset. I remember the next time after that time, the first time he said, "go away," and slammed into his room in that angry tone of voice. I took a breath, gave him a couple minutes, and then I knocked on the door and started to pretend that I was fighting with the door to get to him, that the door wouldn't let me in. And with a few minutes, he was laughing, and he was willing to connect and tell me why he was so upset, and we could move forward with our day. So we've talked about how you can use listening partnerships to go back and clean out those memories and sensations, to, you know, empty our emotional backpack. We want to talk a minute about the benefits you'll start to see when you're getting regular listening time. In a nutshell, listening time helps us counter those societal myths that tell us that our preteens and teens should be more independent and they don't need us. We can overcome the front that they're putting up, how they seem to be isolating themselves for us. It helps us counter the feelings of powerlessness that get stimulated whenever this little human being won't do what we want them to do, or big human being. In my son's case, he's a foot taller than I now. And we're more able to see them as good no matter what. And we can continue to reach for them, offering the connection that all that research shows that they so desperately want and need. Now, our listening tools, they start to look a little bit different with our preteens and teens. but it's still crucial that we're doing some kind of regular special time with them. Special time is our connection vitamin tool, and it's a finite amount of time when we give our child our undivided attention and follow their lead, delighting in them. We did a whole teleseminar on special time with teens recently, and we'll include the link in the replay email so you can really listen to that and really start to put that undivided attention, that those little chunks of time back into your routine with your teens. What it is important to know is that you'll have to look for opportunities to shine your light on them. You know, dropping into their room to hang out, listening to their music in the car, giving them your undivided attention during a mundane errand to go get some shoes. Now, setting limits and expectations might look a little different because they might be decided upon collaboratively, perhaps in a family meeting. And when we stay listen to their feelings, we get many more words than tears. Remember in the beginning, Madeline said that one of the traps of this age is thinking that our child is thinking because they're so verbal, but they're really not. They really can't. This is that time when we've set a limit, we've set an expectation, they bump up against it, and then they're talking. They might try to negotiate. And we might engage thinking it's a discussion. It's not. It's not a teachable moment. We don't want to argue with their logic, defend themselves. And this is a time that I have to keep telling myself, just listen, just listen. What I found to be most helpful about the hand-in-hand approach at this point in my son's life is our emphasis on play. There's something about play that's nonverbal. It's so connecting, and we recommend that you attempt to be playful. When you attempt to be playful, that you're taking a less powerful role. And thinking of it as making fun of you. You know, we know our preteens and teens are starting to get very sensitive. So when we're being playful about their resistance, it's we're making fun of us. And I've learned to bring limits playfully. I mentioned earlier how I played with the door, that it was the door that wouldn't let me in. Often I will sing, no, 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 no. I threaten to dance a lot. Trying to get my son out of bed in the morning, we play Don't Fall Off the Bed, where I'm begging him, don't fall off the bed, don't fall off the bed, as I'm trying to pull him off the bed. It makes for great laughter and really helps the morning get started on a good note. So we have some great ideas on our website about how to play with their name calling and insults, as in, oh, please don't call me stupid, that's my power word and turns me into a dancing machine. If you can probably guess by now, my son hates it when I dance. To be playful in the face of their stubborn refusal and even their name calling requires getting lots and lots of listening time so that we don't take it personally and we don't fear what will become of them. You know, oftentimes that's our biggest fear, like, oh, if they're like this now. So we take all that to listening partnerships. So now we've come back full circle to listening partnerships, and now we're going to stop and take some questions. So if you have a question, if you would press *2, and that'll raise your hand. And we'll see how many we get to in the next 15 minutes or so. If there are some people with their hands raised, after we kind of close out the call for the sake of the recording, we'll see if we can still get to some questions. So any questions? Just hit *2 and raise your hand. Or any thoughts about anything that we've shared so far? Yeah.
I just wanted to say, how do you approach that playfulness with teenagers? Because they often, when they're in that anger mode, they're not really willing to listen to your playfulness.
Madeline, I'll start, and if you have some ideas to fill in. I will say that, yes, it is challenging. And one of the things in listening partnerships is that you can work on being playful. Like if your listening partner says, plays your child and just throws out something that your child says, like, oh, you're so stupid or something, you know, and you, and, you know, you can kind of work on it in the listening partnerships. The other thing I say is that in order to be a playful parent, you got to, not only do you got to get a lot of listening time so that you don't take that stuff personally, but you got to feed your funny. And, you know, I recommend doing things like, you know, watching old Dick Van Dyke movies or old physical comedy movies, or, you know, if you're walking into walls, it's in making fun of yourself, not making fun of your child.
Well,
it doesn't take much for my son to get out of that angry place if I'm making fun of me. And if I'm threatening to dance, or if I'm being silly, or, you know, but I have to feed my funny in order to do that. So, and Madeline, do you have some things you might want to throw in there?
Yeah. I think Dan Siegel in the book, there's a book called Brainstorm, which is actually really, I found it hard reading, but there's a couple of YouTube recordings of Dan Siegel talking about the book, which are much more accessible. And he talks about, to back you up there, Kathy, he talks about us as adults having to, he talks about the essence of adolescence. And it stands for a bunch of things, but one of them is sort of creative exploration. And I think we do need to be making sure that we're not too serious. We get very serious. So cultivating our own funny is really important. And the other thing, and Kathy's an expert at this, the other thing is that I agree with you, Samira, it's tricky it is tricky territory when your child's upset, you know, it full stop, it's tricky territory. And if you get it a bit wrong, you know, it may make them more upset. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's like, well, we're working with the upset here. But one of the things that I think helps is to have playfulness in your relationship. So you make sure you're doing playfulness, not at times when there's an upset around. You work it into the sort of language of your relationship with one another, so that when difficulties arise, you have that language in common. And I've heard Kathy talk about using crash mats and having games around physical play that mean that she can use them, and it's part of her language with her son. I don't know if you want to talk to that at all, Kathy, but
I think that's a great point. That you know, we have a tool we call the vigorous snuggle. And that's a tool that's really great to use with particularly with younger children when they get upset, when there's some aggressiveness, you know, where you come in and you just snuggle, and you're providing that skin-to-skin contact and that that connection, and you're also helping to stop the throwing of something. And I recommend to parents that they practice that vigorous snuggle when things are good. Because in the moment of the upset, when faced with your scared, angry child, it'll fly right out of your head. You know, especially if you have any, you know, there's any anger, any chaos of that kind of thing in your own childhood. When faced with a really upset child, thoughts of what to do will fly right out of your head. That's why, you know, I talked about, I've had to really work on my fear around that kind of upset, fear of any kind of upset, so that I can stay calm. But going back to the point, because I'm sorry, I'm making two points here. One is to, you know, be working on any fears we have around their upset and listening time. But the other is to be, as just really reiterating what Madeline said, to be making sure that play is part of your, just, you know, it's always been part of my relationship with my son from the time he was little. We wrestled. We did sock fights. We did, how I handled his spitting was I got the idea one time to, he was spitting and I grabbed this towel and I held it out like a bullfighter. And so he was running to the towel, and then I held the towel up, and he was trying to spit at me over the towel and under the towel. That's kind of been a recurring thing of, you know, when he's – that I will grab a blanket and hold it between us, and now it turns immediately playful because now he's trying to get me over the over the blanket or under the blanket. I have more playful ideas in my repertoire because we have so much of a language of play. And it can start with, you know, on Friday nights, we're going to roll back the carpet and put away the valuables and push back the furniture, and we're going to have a sock fight, you know, or we're going to get those indoor snowballs they're like soft, like little balls. We're going to have a pillow fight. So you start introducing playfulness as Madeline. It's such a great way to put Madeline, as a language, so that you have it when things get hard. And I will admit that in the moment, I am always deciding, do I want to be playful or do I want to just listen? You know, I have both those tools. I have play listening and I have stay listening. And sometimes I choose just to listen. And I, you know, my mantra is don't bite, don't bite, don't bite. And I just listen. And then there's other times that, especially if we're trying to move forward, I might try to be playful about it. And here's the other thing I would say. There's a great rule from improvisational comedy, if any of you have ever seen improv. Or know about improv. The rule in improv is yes and. So my son says, you know, you're so stupid. Then rather than pushing against that and saying, don't you dare call me that. You know, you don't get to talk to me this way. So that's no, right? That's a no. That's pushing against it. I go with it. I say, yes, yes, and that's my power word. And no, I'm going to break out into song and dance. You know, so that's a good rule of thumb for being playful, or to practice the yes and. You play with whatever they've given you and see if you can find the laughter by making fun of yourself.
No, I think the point both you've raised, both of you ladies, is they're fantastic. And I think it is very valuable to have instilled that in your relationship from a time when the children are younger, because then you can extend that as they get older, because we all know what it's like, whether it's a girl with her sulkiness and the boys with their aggression. It's difficult, but what had happened in my instance, my example, is that my son and I were incredibly close, and he was very loving and he's incredibly gentle. And then life takes over and you just don't know where that went, that playfulness. But then suddenly one day he's 13 and he's become this whole alien, you know, and I think, wow, you know, where did he come from? So then to sort of have put that playfulness was very difficult because he was in an extremely angry mood. And I just couldn't get to the bottom of it because he just wouldn't talk to me. So even if I said to him, can you not talk to me? Can you explain to me why is this like this? And why do you feel like that? I need to understand that I can help. And he just wouldn't talk to me. For 10 years, he just would not open up. He just shut down all barriers. And it's only recently that I've been able to sort of prod a little bit. And one of the things I've heard you ladies say is that, you know, if I've understood this correctly, it's not the blaming. It's to say, look, I don't like the way you talk to me. It's not that you are very rude, you are very disrespectful, but rather, I don't like it. Am I correct? Have I misunderstood?
Yeah. Madeline, I just want to say one thing quickly is that, you know, one of the things that's challenging about, one of the things that's challenging about coming to, you know, wanting to do a different parenting approach or, you know, your child is now 13, 14, 15, and things seem to have gone really south. And then you come to Hand in Hand and we talk about play. And as you mentioned, Samara, if you don't kind of already have that language, it's like, how do you start it? And the big point that Madeline and I wanted to make about this in this teleseminar is that we start with us. And I remember when I did my starter class with Patty, and it was a starter class for parents of preteens, and our assignment the first week was to examine all the times that we stopped ourselves from connecting or what gets in the way of connecting. So just as you were saying, Samara, like that thought of like, how dare you speak to me this way, or how dare you disrespect me this way, or how dare you be so rude, that thought and that feeling, it gets in the way of our reaching for our child. And so the way to turn things around, and it can be literally like turning that ship around with our preteen or teen, particularly if we feel like things have really gone south, is really to start with us and to look at, you know, what am I going to let go of? So if I can be playful with this kind of language, or if I can look at this language as this is part of their needing to, like if I can translate their language, like, the you're so stupid, if I can translate that into I'm really hurting. And if I can hear the I'm really hurting, then I don't need them to, I can just keep reaching for my son, even though he can't articulate what's actually going on with him.
So would you say to him in that case, sorry to interrupt, Kathy, but in that case, would you say to him that, so when he's saying to you, God, you're so stupid, Mom, so rather than being negative, would you turn around and say, look, what I can hear is that you're upset at something. What I can hear is that you're hurting somewhere, and I'd like to help you. Is that how you'd reach to him? Would you actually use those words?
Well, I would actually reach to him in the playful way that I just said.
Okay.
Because here's why. The hand-in-hand, the foundation of our approach is knowing that when a child is saying those kinds of things that they cannot think, that's what's driving their behavior is that the emotional processing part of their brain, the limbic system, and they don't actually have access to the logic language part of their brain. So if I'm trying to have a logical conversation with someone who doesn't have access to that part of their brain, it ends up being frustrating for both of us. It's literally like I'm trying to tap on their head. You know, it's like tap, 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 but there's no, they can't process what I'm saying. So even though it seems like they have their reasoning because they're telling you like all the things that you're doing wrong, all of that, if you anchor yourself in the truth, which is that they love you, and in this moment they're hurting, and in this moment they can't think, then most of the time I don't respond logically. Most of the time I either just listen until they can dump it all out, or I respond playfully.
Okay.
So, I don't know, Madeline, do you want to, we kind of got to need to wrap up, but do you want to say anything about that before we do our little?
Yeah. The thing I'd say is, Samira, you're right to observe that it's tricky. And the thing I found really useful to understand is that when our kids were little, it was much easier just to bowl them over with warmth and connection. You know, things were going off track, we could bowl them over with warmth and connection. The thing we need to keep in mind, and it's a much more subtle process, I think, with older kids, is that when we bring that kind of rush of warmth that can be playfulness, what that does is that they've had this big lump of feeling under wraps. Their social survival has depended, their existence socially at school and everywhere else has depended on keeping everything very tightly under control. So we need to understand both that, you know, things are flaring all over the place in their brain anyway, but when we come with bowling up with warmth, that's not a bad thing to do, but it will, unlike when they're younger sometimes, you know, then they can, let's connect. But what happens first for them is a flare of feeling. The warmth and connection you bring brings up that flare of feeling. So that's part of why you get that flash when you bring playfulness. And you just, you know, you just need to know that, and maybe then you're stepping back, like Kathy says, and oh, I need to listen, you know. Or I find it interesting, but I've found it useful to understand that that's why it's so volatile, and I have to be just careful about, you know, I need to keep heading towards them, but I have to watch what's going to work for them now.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah. That's very helpful.
Great. And we, you know, again, our message today is that we're able to do our best thinking in those moments and our best kind of, you know, sort of dancing with what flares up for them. We're able to stay calm and not get re-stimulated ourselves when we're doing our own emotional work and we're cleaning up, and we're continually examining, like, why do I need them to do this? Like, what, you know, what's my, like, if my son doesn't clean up his room, what's my fear about that? Or what's my resentment about that? I'm continually sort of examining those things that, and working on them so that, they don't get in the way of my thinking in that moment when he really, more than anything, needs me to connect and needs me. I mean, boy, if there's anything that preteens and teens, the message they get, and Madeline talked about this a little bit, is over and over again, is like, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, you're not good enough. So if my parenting continues to send that message, like, oh, you didn't clean this up, you didn't do that, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you did do this, you shouldn't do that, then I'm reinforced, you know, I'm not being that parent that I want to be, which is to really send that message and anchor my son in the truth that he is good, no matter how much he flares. And I get that capacity from listening partnerships. So, oh, we're at the hour.
Yeah, we're at the hour. Shall I wrap up?
Yes, that'd be great.
Okay. So we hope that we've given you some ideas about how you can preteen, how you can parent your preteen or teen well as you stay not just sane but relaxed and loving and playful. It's just an hour we have here. It's just a taster. And I think doing this takes practice, and it takes you being supported, and Hand in Hand in general is here to support you. And Kathy and I are particularly passionate about it. So we'd love to continue to work with you and support you, however you can figure that out. So parents can get a hold of me. Probably the easiest way is through my website. So it's Madeline Winter, MadeleineWinter, Winter, all one word, .com. Just coming up, I have a support call. I run support calls by conference call, and I've got one for parents of preteens, which is coming up on November the 2nd if you're in Europe or the US, and a day later if you're here in Australia. But I've got things coming up, so you can get in touch with me there. And Kathy, how can people get hold of you?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Madeline. I am going to be leading one of our six-week starter classes in November. It's Mondays at 10 a.m. Pacific time. It begins Monday, November 13th. And I moderate our and that you can find out about through the website. If you just look for Kathy Gordon starter class, you can find that. Although there are starter classes that are offered at many different days and times, if that one in particular doesn't work out for you. I moderate our hand-in-hand parent support Facebook group, so you can find me there, and you can also connect with me through my Facebook page, Parenting Connection with Kathy Gordon. That's Kathy with a K and G-O-R-D-O-N. If you want to shoot me an email privately, if you look me up on the Hand in Hand website, you can also reach me. So you can PM me through Facebook, or you can send me an email, and my email's on the Hand in Hand website under my bio. Let's see, what else? Anything else we want to say about all the wonderful resources Hand in Hand has? You can find all of that on our website, all our classes. We have self-guided video classes. We have a Hand in Hand Parenting Club where you get a video in your, like, tools, a little video, teaching video every week with an accompanying article, and you get a weekly live Q&A coaching call with instructors like Madeline and myself. And all of that's either in our newsletter or on our website. And lastly, we'll just tell you that Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization. We depend on your donations to provide free services like this parenting call, the moderation of our free parent discussion groups, and then we have scholarship programs for classes and also for our instructor training. And it's easy to donate any amount. You can just click on the donate button on the website and give what you can, and we really need your help so that together we can support parents everywhere. With that, we'll wrap up the call. Thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed our teleseminar and that our experience has been helpful. It's wonderful to have you here with us, and we really hope that you'll keep in touch and let us know how it's going.
Thanks, Kathy. So we'll say bye, I think.
Yeah. Thank you, Madeline. Thanks. It's been really great doing this with you.
Yeah.
Please, everybody stay in touch.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.